You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Happy weekend, everybody. This is a post-game podcast, a bonus episode. The Wolves, of course, played Friday and Saturday. I want to mostly focus on the Saturday game for a lot of reasons, obviously, if you watch both of those games. But I want to hit on notes from both those games and the majority of the time, again, spent on Saturday. Studs and duds, takeaways from the game as we get you ready for another week of Timberwolves basketball. Of course, we'll still be back tomorrow for a regular Monday episode, but I wanted to get a bonus episode up because the Wolves did play the Friday-Saturday back-to-back. Before we get to all that, though, a quick reminder that you can subscribe to the show anywhere that you get your podcasts. That includes, of course, iTunes and Spotify. Also, you can follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, so Friday night, the Timberwolves lost to the Hawks in a game where they pretty simply just didn't try hard enough. It sometimes boils down to that in the NBA. And as sad as that is, that's what happened on Friday. The Timberwolves offense was not good. D'Angelo Russell was very ball dominant early in the game, especially, and only played 21 minutes because the Wolves were blown out by the early part of the third quarter. They were down 19 at halftime and they threw in the towel very early. Really nobody on the Timberwolves played very well in that game. And there really wasn't much to take from it either, except for a lack of effort. That was the biggest issue. Malik Beasley had an okay game. Nas Reed had an okay game. Jared Vanderbilt played hard as he always does, but Anthony Edwards had another terrible game on Friday. He shot 2 of 12 from the field, had 3 turnovers in 24 minutes. Jaden McDaniels struggled after being great on Wednesday. So really the Wolves rookies were arguably the worst players on the floor on Friday. And the Wolves only managed to score 98 points, lost by 18 to Atlanta on Friday. So the feeling going into Saturday's back-to-back was not positive. And then you find out pregame that D'Angelo Russell was always going to miss this game due to planned rest on a back-to-back. And it's like, well, what's going to happen in this game? Is this going to be the typical, like, oh, stars are out, and so everybody else plays hard and they win? The answer is yes. They beat a Pelicans team that struggled a lot lately as well. The Wolves are only a game behind the Pelicans now in the Western Conference. Pelicans are 5-10. The Wolves are 4-11. And in the absence of D'Angelo Russell, the Timberwolves played an extremely solid game from end to end. They were balanced offensively. They competed defensively. They beat a much bigger team on the glass. I mean, Steven Adams had 3 rebounds in this game. And we'll get to that, the specifics here in a second. But that's just a reflection of how hard this team competed. And it was the exact opposite of what we saw on Friday night. So quickly, what happened in the game, the Wolves started kind of slow, again, playing hard, but neither team was really scoring early in the game. It was kind of like the whole game was happening in slow motion. And the Wolves were down by 3 at the end of the first quarter, played a lot better in the second quarter, but then all of a sudden, Eric Bledsoe went off towards the end of the second quarter. Malik Beasley was, for the most part, guarding him and just couldn't stop him. He hit back-to-back threes, and then he hit a buzzer beater right after the Wolves had pulled ahead by one. Bledsoe hits a mid-range jumper at the buzzer to put the Pelicans back up by one at halftime. So it was a good first half, but it just kind of felt like, okay, well, now we're just going to end up with a 130 to 125 game, and the Wolves aren't going to be able to stop anybody. Well, the third quarter was really, really good for the Timberwolves. They played extremely hard defensively, held the Pelicans to just 14 points. Unfortunately, the Wolves struggled offensively in the quarter and shot the ball, I think it was roughly 33%. They were like 8 of 23 or something in the quarter. And thankfully, they were able to get out in transition a little bit. They turned, for the game, 20 Pelicans turnovers into 20 Timberwolves points. A lot of that came in the third quarter. Minnesota had 14 steals for the game. Josh Kogi had 5 steals for the game. Jared Vanderbilt, Ed Davis, Anthony Edwards all had 2. The Wolves turned multiple Pelicans mistakes into fast break buckets for Malik Beasley and others. Malik Beasley made some hay in that quarter. His jumper was not falling in this game, but he had a good game in transition. And the Wolves held the Pelicans to 14. They only scored 24 of their own, but that meant they could take a 9-point lead to the fourth quarter. Of course, given everything we've seen from the Timberwolves lately, there wasn't probably too much optimism that the Wolves would hang on to that lead. But they did stretch it to 18 points in the fourth quarter. About midway through the frame, there was about 6.5 minutes left in the game. The Wolves were up by 18, but then they went for 3 minutes without scoring. And the Pelicans had put Zion Williamson at the five. The Wolves had taken both Nasri and Ed Davis off the court around this time. And basically, the Wolves were running without a center. Jared Vanderbilt was the de facto center. They started getting beat on the glass a little bit. And even though the Wolves didn't score for 3 minutes, it was like 3 minutes and 20 seconds of game time that they didn't score. The Pelicans only scored 8 minutes in that time because, or excuse me, 8 points over that span of time because the Wolves defense was actually pretty good in this game. They had a good plan for Zion. They had a good plan for Brandon Ingram, which was mostly Josh Okogie pestering him. And Ingram had a terrible game despite scoring 30 points. But the Pelicans then got to within 10. It looked a little bit dicey, but the Wolves were able to get enough good offense going. Malik Beasley finally made a three-pointer. It was really timely. Rubio got fouled twice and split the free throws, made 2 of 4. In between there somewhere, Okogie hit a three-pointer in the corner on a nice driving kick from Malik Beasley where he drove from the right slot and kicked into the left corner for Okogie for a wide-open three. And the Wolves got some, you know, Beasley had been cold from outside all game. He ended up 2 of 8 from beyond the arc, but hit a big three. Okogie has been 20% all year on three-pointers and made one. The Wolves struggled at the free-throw line down the stretch, and actually things got a little bit dicey in the final minute. Rubio went 1 of 2 twice. Culver went 1 of 2. And in between all of this, Culver shoots Ingram on a three-point attempt. Then McLaughlin goes 1 of 2. Then Ingram makes another three. Then Culver goes 1 of 2. So nobody, until the Wolves were up by 6 with 26 seconds left, everybody had split their free throws. They had 5 consecutive trips to the free throw line where they went 1 of 2, and then Naz Reid hit 2 of 2. Pelicans missed a shot. Beasley hit 2 of 2 to finish the game. So the Wolves won by 10, but there were some nerves at the end of this game because of the poor free throw shooting. They've been a good free throw shooting team all night and ended up 30 of 37 for the game, which is 81%. But you go 4 of 8 or 5 of 10 or whatever that was in the final couple of minutes until Naz Reid steps the line with 26 seconds left. That's not a recipe to put teams away. This game should have been over a little bit sooner than it was. But the Wolves will take a 10-point win, no doubt. So next, what I want to do is talk about studs and duds. I want to take key takeaways from this game and what it might mean or might not mean moving forward. Get more of the sports news that you need in less time with our brand new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. All right, the Timberwolves had a bunch of players play well on Saturday. Like I said earlier, it was really just a balanced offensive attack. Nobody had more than 20 points. At the same time, the Wolves still had 6 players of the 10 that played in double figures. And of the 10 that played, 8 of them scored 9 or more points. It was an extremely balanced attack that got them to 120 on the night. And relatively efficient as well. They shot 43% from the field. The third quarter kind of tanked that a little bit. But they got to the free throw line 37 times. They only turned it over 11 times to 23 assists. And just an all-around solid offensive performance, or really both ends of the floor, for the Wolves. If I'm going to pick 3 studs, though, I'm going to call out these 3 guys. Naz Reid is number 1. He led the team in scoring with 20 points. He did only have 4 rebounds in 27 minutes, which I know I keep harping on this, but he's got to grab more rebounds than 4 in 27 minutes. Still, Steven Adams only had 3 rebounds in 23 minutes, and Brandon Ingram only had 4. The Zion had 11 rebounds, and then Josh Hart, of all people, had 8 off the bench. But otherwise, nobody else on the Pelicans had more than 4 rebounds in this game. And Naz Reid was a big part of that, just kind of being in the way, being in the paint, and being efficient offensively. He shot 5 of 10, 2 of 4 from beyond the arc, and hit 8 of 8 free throws, including those 2 big ones, with the Wolves holding onto a 6-point lead with under 30 seconds to play. So 20 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block from Naz. Only 1 turnover, only had 4 fouls, which is part of the reason his minutes were a little bit shorter early. But still, And if you want to play this game in the starting lineup, he had the best plus minus of +8. So the Wolves will take 24-2 with a block from Naz Reid pretty much every night of the week if he's going to be the starter for a period of time. I've talked a lot on the show about how he's much better suited as a backup, but this was a good game from Naz Reid. And if you had told me before the game Steven Adams would have had 5 points and 3 rebounds and no blocks, I would have been shocked. I thought this was a game that he could have a Clint Capella-like effect against the Timberwolves, but that did not happen. Jared Vanderbilt is another stud. He had 16-11, the second double-double of his short Timberwolves career. 16-11, two steals and a block. Only committed one foul in this game, which is somewhat shocking. He also only played 21 minutes, which is extremely shocking because he shot 8 of 13. He somehow got up 13 shots in just 21 minutes. I mean, he's played a couple games this year where he played more minutes than this and only shot the ball twice. Ricky Rubio was looking for him a lot in the pick and roll game early. There were a couple of lobs, a couple of dump offs at the rim. Vando missed a shot or two that he should have made right at the rim. But for the most part, I mean, 8 of 13 shooting, all of it coming in the paint. The Wolves will take that. 16-11, two steals from Jared Vanderbilt in just 21 minutes. He was active defensively again and was just a really good player. His minutes with Ricky Rubio, and he hasn't played that much with him because remember, Ricky missed the last couple of games due to health and safety protocols. And before that, Vanderbilt had just entered the rotation. Vanderbilt and Rubio are a very good match for one another because Rubio has not had very many athletic anybody, but especially with the Timberwolves, athletic fours and fives who can go up and get lobs and have a catch radius because of their wingspan and athleticism like Vanderbilt has. And so I think him and Rubio together will play extremely well moving forward in any opportunity that they get to share the floor. The third stud for me in this game is Jarrett Culver. Off the bench, 25 minutes, 16 points, 5 rebounds, 6 of 9 shooting, 2 of 4 on three-point attempts. He was really, really good in this game, was really good defensively again, was confident. There, you know, one of those 4 three-point attempts was a end of shot clock heave, but the others were all in rhythm, good attempts, and he made shots at the rim. He was aggressive. This was, Jarrett Culver has these blips where he has a game, maybe two, maybe three over the past year plus that we've seen where he is a legitimate rotation player, arguably a starter, shows flashes of, you know, the star potential that everybody thought he had coming out of Texas Tech only 18 months ago. It's still in there. It's a confidence thing more than anything. There's still some shot mechanics. He was still 2 of 4 at the free throw line, but he can be a good player. And this was the quintessential Jarrett Culver game, 16 points, 5 rebounds, no turnovers in 25 minutes. He also wasn't asked to handle the ball very much. I mean, Ricky Rubio and Jordan McLaughlin played 48 minutes of point guard. And I'll get into this in a second. They didn't play together either, which was good. But they played 48 minutes of point guard. Jarrett Culver did not need to initiate offense, and that took a lot of pressure off him. And he played extremely well off the ball in this game. And that's important to note. I'm actually not going to hand out a dud for this game. And I typically try not to do that because I think it's a cop-out. But there was nobody on this team that had a bad game. Anthony Edwards is maybe the closest thing. He shot 5 of 14, but you take this game in context and a 5 of 14 shooting night with 18 points for him in 20 minutes, that is a worlds better than he's played over the past week, I guess 2 weeks at this point. He's had a string of just terrible games and he was aggressive in this game. Yeah, half of his 14 shots were 3-pointers. He was 2 of 7 beyond the arc, but he got to the free throw line. He didn't get very many calls on Friday. He didn't really get any calls on Friday. And he got 3 calls in the paint in this game. He got to shoot 6 free throws, made all of them, helped him to his 18 points on 14 shots. He had a couple of steals, had a couple of deflections that won't go down as steals where he played passing lanes defensively. He only had 1 rebound and 1 assist in 20 minutes, which isn't great. But this was Anthony Edwards' best game in 2 weeks, and it's not close. So I'm not going to give him a dud. He played well and was a big part of the Wolves bench scoring. The Wolves bench far outplayed the Pelicans bench in this game. And again, all the way around, this team played well. Ed Davis had 9 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals in 19 minutes, was active, played the Pelicans, played his minutes against Jackson Hayes well. Jackson Hayes is a pretty good big man off the bench for the Pelicans and had no impact in this game. He had 2 points and 3 rebounds in 17 minutes. Ed Davis had 2 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. In 19 minutes. Jaden McDaniels wasn't great offensively. He was only 1 of 7 shooting, but he had a couple of blocks, was active on defense, was a positive player off the bench for the Wolves, had another strong showing, 2 out of 3 games now in the rotation. He's played well. And Jordan McLaughlin was really good. It was hard to not give him a stud for this game. He was a team high plus 10 in the plus minus column, 11 points, 4 assists, 4 of 7 shooting, made both of his 3-point attempts in this game. and got to the rim a couple of times and continues to just show that he is a really solid point guard. He can score when he needs to, but he is a pass first type point guard with the ability to knock down open jumpers and is extremely well-rounded. I am not about to get on a soapbox and talk about how the Wolves are better without D'Angelo Russell, because D'Angelo Russell is a really good offensive player. But you could see in this game the importance of sharing the ball, and you could see in this game the importance of having point guards who are willing to share the ball in any scenario and only shoot when their shot is available to them. The other thing that goes along with this is, well, actually, let's get to that next. So finishing up studs and duds, there wasn't really anybody that got close to being a dud for this game. I think I've talked about everyone. Not really Josh Okogie yet, but he only shot 2 of 8. But he had 5 steals in 27 minutes and basically shut down Brandon Ingram, at least in terms of, I guess, shutting down isn't the right term for a guy who got 30 points. But he held him to, you know, just 2 assists, 7 turnovers, 5 fouls in the game, frustrated him. He had a couple of offensive fouls, a travel, just some sloppy plays that were primarily due to the ball pressure that Okogie was putting on him. And, you know, Ingram got his. He got 30 points on 20 shots. But it was a sloppy 30 points on 20 shots. And Josh Okogie was a big part of that. So this was a good game from Josh. And Rubio had a good game as well. 9 points, 7 assists, 7 rebounds, and a steal. He did turn it over 4 times, only attempted 4 shots, but he was 7 of 10 at the free throw line, was a positive player, initiated the offense, got everybody involved, did all the things that you want to see Rubio do. And it was certainly one of his better games of the season. All right, next I want to just dive in a little bit to the point guard conversation, the rotation, and what we can look for when the Wolves hit the court again on Monday against Golden State. Betting on the NBA does not have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the brand new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast today, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. All right, so I alluded to this a bit last segment, but the Wolves did not play any 2-point guard lineups in this game. Jordan McLaughlin came off the bench, played 20 minutes. Rubio started and played 28. They basically split evenly, but they did not share the court together. And as much as I was on the bandwagon of the acquisition of Ricky Rubio from the sense that the Wolves could start both Rubio and Russell, they could play together, etc., so far I've been wrong about that. It hasn't made sense. It hasn't gone well. It's been better than McLaughlin and Russell together in even less minutes. But the Rubio-Russell minutes have not been good. And part of that's due to what opposing teams can do to them offensively because of Russell's shortcomings defensively, and then the Wolves playing 2-point guards in the backcourt. Obviously, you sacrifice some size and some length, even though both of them are pretty big point guards. But you also sacrifice some athleticism. Neither Rubio or Russell are super bouncy athletes by any stretch of the imagination. So what the Wolves do in this game? Well, they played 48 minutes of solid. They had 48 minutes of solid point guard play. Combined, they shot 5 of 12, 2 of 3 beyond the arc, 8 of 12 at the free throw line. All those numbers, you'll live with those. Combined, 20 points, 11 rebounds. Excuse me, 20 points, 11 assists, 8 rebounds, 2 steals, 6 turnovers. So 11 assists to 6 turnovers, you know, it's a little high on the turnover side. That's the only thing you can say about the point guard tandem in this game and complain about it. I mean, you're going to take 75% at the free throw line on 12 attempts. You're going to take 2 of 3 from beyond the arc. I mean, between the two of them, 8 rebounds, 11 assists. That's what you want to see out of your point guard spot. Now, D'Angelo Russell, if he had played, would have scored a lot more points, would have been more inefficient or less efficient. He wouldn't have gotten to the free throw line as often. He would have shot a lot more threes. I don't know if the Wolves offense would have ran as smoothly. I haven't looked at these numbers yet, but or if they're even live as of yet, but I bet if you look at the number of passes in this game, the Wolves had a lot more passes in this game than they did, say, on Friday against Atlanta, or on Wednesday against Orlando in the game that they lost, that they blew the big lead. The team was moving the ball. I mean, Anthony Edwards was about the only guy who's shot hunting. Malik Beasley got a bunch of shots, but that was mostly because of the way that Beasley plays and, you know, running to his spot on the 3-point line, and the Wolves running plays for Malik Beasley. The Wolves don't run very many plays for D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell just calls his own number because he's already got the ball in his hands. Malik Beasley is getting his 18 shots largely in the flow of the offense. He also had 3 assists and no turnovers. So I'm not going to complain about Beasley's 6-for-18 because he had 16 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, no turnovers. He struggled some defensively, but did what he needed to do late in the game. Big assist, big 3-pointer. Beasley's 18 shots were not out of line in this game. Anthony Edwards had 14 in 20 minutes off the bench. That's to be expected. That's what he's going to do. The next leading shooter in terms of attempts in this game is Jared Vanderbilt with 13. You know who's not looking for his own shot is Jared Vanderbilt. He was just getting great looks at the rim. And the Wolves just simply functioned better as an offense in this game. And we'll see what it looks like when D'Angelo Russell comes back next week. I mean, he's going to play against Golden State on Monday, actually twice next week against Golden State. I'm sure he's going to be motivated. I'm sure Andrew Wiggins will be motivated. Just think about how good Wiggins always played against Cleveland when he was on the Timberwolves, as weird as that is. So who knows? We'll see what happens. I'm not about to... I think the facts are the Wolves offense, as does basically every offense, runs better when there's more passing and less over dribbling. That's just across the board true with basketball. Russell, as a player, lends... And what he does is he over dribbles and he doesn't pass the ball as much. When he does pass, he's a really good passer. And that's why I say the Wolves just need to get comfortable in their system and what these guys are each doing individually. Russell has to be more willing to share the ball and all those things. All those things are true. It doesn't mean that Russell's a bad player. The Wolves are better without him. It just means that this was maybe just kind of a nice refresh, a step back, looking at you know, there is talent on this team. They're not going to win often without D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns, but it was good to get a win without them to prove that they can do it, to show that when they share the ball and play hard defensively and rebound the basketball, they can be, you know, they can win games. They can pick up a couple of wins here and there and be competitive at least until Karl Anthony Towns returns. There's probably an outside shot if there hasn't been any update on Towns' condition, but Monday is 10 days from when he announced his positive test. So there's probably a chance he's back Monday. More realistically, it's probably the game after that. But if he comes back next week and the Wolves can be competitive again, I mean, the 10th spot isn't completely out of the conversation. So it was good to kind of take a step back, hit the reset button, and Ryan Saunders can use the tape from this game and say, hey, look, guys, when we play hard defensively and rebound and share the ball on offense, we're going to be in basically every game with or without Karl Anthony Towns. And those are the simple things the Wolves haven't been doing. There's enough talent on this team. You're not looking at like the Brooklyn Nets from 2006 or whatever year that was when they were. I mean, this team shouldn't be quite this bad. And that's why it was refreshing to see all of those simple things kind of come together and happen on Saturday night against the Pelicans. And we'll see if Saunders can convince his team that, you know, hey, you guys can compete against the Golden State Warriors on Monday. I mean, the Warriors are under 500. They're not the Warriors of a few years ago. They're not the Warriors from last year either, but they're not super scary. What's the record now? They're 8-8. So they're at 500. But Monday's a winnable game, even without Karl Anthony Towns. D'Angelo Russell just has to do his part within the offense. He's had a couple of really good games mixed in there, and I'm not about to suggest that the Wolves are better without him. However, D'Angelo Russell's got to do his part to play as part of this team, as part of this rotation, or as part of this offensive unit, I should say. And the Wolves can compete. They can. So upcoming schedule this week, we'll talk more about this. We'll have a show tomorrow on Monday as well. But upcoming schedule is a Warriors game on Monday night. That is a 9 p.m. Central tip. We'll be broadcast on NBA TV. The Wolves will stay in Golden State and stay in the Bay Area, I guess, and play Golden State on Wednesday. And that's an ESPN game, the only ESPN game on the Wolves schedule for the first half of the season. And then next Friday, they are back home for Philadelphia. So it'd be important to at least get a split in Golden State. Perhaps Towns will be back in time for the Wednesday game. That's complete speculation on my part, but that would be almost 2 weeks from his test. So again, we don't know, but hopefully he hasn't had many symptoms and is feeling better and can get his negative tests. And obviously his health is far more important than his availability for a basketball game. But we're starting to get to the point where that it's, you know, we can start talking about his return and Juancho Hernan Gomez's return now that we're at 9 days past the positive test. So that'll be something we talk about on Monday. We'll update any news that happens in that arena. And we'll look ahead to the week on Monday, preview Wolves Warriors, talk about what Golden State's been up to lately, and get you ready for a full week of Timberwolves basketball. Now that the Wolves have, instead of saying they've lost 11 of their last 12, let's say they've won two of their last six. I think that's the best way to look at this. They're 2-4 in their last six, and hopefully things are looking up for Ryan Saunders' group. All right, we'll be back on Monday. That's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. And also, if you are so inclined, please help us out with a review. It definitely helps us out, helps us get in front of more folks. You can also follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.